I never had a coming out. Melissa Etheridge never stopped by my house with a toaster. Allen Ginsberg never wrote a poem about my anus. I never even had a hokey after-school special sort of moment with my mom, telling her why I was suddenly so interested in the music of Andrew Lloyd Webber. What would I have said at some mythical coming out party? There was never any light emanating from some guy's cock or ass pulsing out, "You're a big homo!" in Morse code. I never got inappropriate erections when watching Silver Spoons, and I didn't wake up one day and say, "I have always wanted to be persecuted for something I have no control over, and since I'm white and male, I suppose I should just start lisping and paying attention to fashion trends." No, my sexual identity came in a series of slow flashes. The first one I remember is Kevin, a year younger than me, a lifetime older. We'd be playing basketball in my driveway, and he'd pull down his sweatpants and start stroking himself. When I visited his house, he'd keep getting dressed and undressed, bending over to pick things up while he was naked. When he was over my house, he'd sit just outside the bathroom door when I went in for a piss, and as soon as my stream of urine made contact with the awaiting toilet water, he'd rush in with my mother's camera and take a picture. My mother kept wondering what she was doing wrong when all of her film came back exposed. I figured, better the film than me. And that was the problem, really. I was afraid of being seen as gay because I had a friend who kept taking off his clothes around me and taking pictures of me while I peed. I never asked him to take his clothes off. I certainly never posed for him. And most of the times that he pointed his naked ass in my direction, I'd look away. It started when we were 12 or 10 or 13, some age before pubic hair and deliberate erections. I had a vague understanding of sex. It was like Japanese porn. A bunch of naked people with the genitals blurred out. "My sister invited me to an orgy," Kevin said. This was most likely a lie. No 17-year-old girl, no matter how ineffectual her parenting, invites her 10-year-old brother to have indiscriminate sex with the people she has to see on a social basis. Or would she? I'm an only child. I've never understood brother-sister relationships. "Do you want to come?" I tried to picture myself in a room full of naked people. I was 11 and fat with a tiny penis. My hair didn't comb properly. I was perpetually bruised or skinned from falling off my bike on one of the dirt paths at the end of my street. I had seen exactly one naked vagina in my so far life. I had been 5. The girl had been 3 and peeing. Sexy wasn't part of my vernacular. "No, I got baseball practice." While I never asked whether or not he went to the orgy, I know he didn't. If he had, he'd have spent every afternoon for the rest of our friendship detailing the parts of women's bodies that I would someday see on late-night Cinemax. Instead, life went on as typical. Me playing Nintendo or basketball or riding my bike. Him following me around, occasionally exposing himself. He must have gotten bored with me when I turned 13. He started hanging out with his next-door neighbor, Jeremy, a professional wrestling fan who liked to reenact his favorite matches. Jeremy Burdick and I never had a strong connection. When my family moved to Cranberry Lake, I was 5 and just beginning my 10-year lust affair with bicycles. I was riding around the neighborhood looking for kids my own age when I saw 3-year-old Jeremy playing in the patch of dirt with a stick. When I asked him what he was doing, he picked up a huge rock, hit me in the face with it, and then ran off with my bike. I don't remember how badly my cheek was cut, whether I had a black eye. I just remember the confusion on my father's face when I told him I'd been mugged by a toddler. 2 years later, I tried to befriend Jeremy again, inviting him to play baseball with me, Kevin, and a couple of the other kids we rounded up. Jeremy agreed. When it was his turn up, he picked my baseball bat up off the street, walked to the curb, and dropped it in the sewer grate. We did not seem destined to be friends. So when he and Jeremy started spending their afternoons taking off each other's clothes and putting each other in headlocks, I decided to seek out new companionship. After a few failed friendships with some of the more popular kids in the neighborhood, I came to the conclusion that Kevin and Jeremy were the best friends I could possibly hope for. So, I started watching wrestling and learned to pepper my conversation with words like "dude" and "oh my head." It wasn't long before I was sitting in my basement watching Kevin and Jeremy pull each other's pants down and smack their asses. When it was just Kevin taking off his clothes, I'd wondered whether he was weird for doing it or whether I was weird for not doing it. Jeremy's existence in the world seemed to prove that I was the strange one for wanting to keep my clothes on. Still, something felt horribly wrong with shaking my ass to provoke someone, and putting my hand on another guy's ass wasn't on my top 10 list of things to do. The afternoon wrestling sessions were a completely different world from my school life. Since I was a year ahead of Kevin and 2 years ahead of Jeremy, they failed to exist between the time the buses dropped us off in front of the school and the time just after the final bell rang, when the teachers would march their students out of the classroom to the bus loop behind the school. At the loop, the teachers would take out their clipboards and check off the names of all the students as they got on their appropriate buses. First, bus 1, then bus 2, all the way through bus 12. Sixth graders went out first and took the back of the bus, then the fifth graders, and so on until the lowly kindergartners took their place in the front 2 rows. While the ritual took place, the bus driver stood on the far side of the loop and smoked. Jeremy almost always sat in the seat in front of Kevin, and the two of them would smack each other with trapper keepers until the bus driver threatened to throw them off. One afternoon, between the fourth and third graders getting on the bus, Kevin called Jeremy an asshole, and Jeremy pulled down his sweatpants, stuck his ass over the seat, and said, "No! This is an asshole!" At which point, Kevin smacked it as hard as he could. One of my fellow sixth graders, Queen Popular Sarah II, inhaled her top lip through her left nostrils and said, "Oh my, you are such a faggot." Were they? I'm 26 now, and while I can no longer stand musicals and have never been one to wear makeup or read fashion magazines, I do enjoy having sex with men. At no point, however, have any of my dates mooned me or smacked my ass during a naked reenactment of a sporting event. The afternoon that Queen Sarah called Kevin a faggot, I went home and looked the word up in my dictionary. I'd heard her use the word a few times before, once or twice to describe me. The only definition was a bundle of sticks or twigs. The definition for fag was to make tired. And since I was growing weary of my afternoons with Kevin and Jeremy, I decided while they might be fags, I wasn't. And for a few months, I stopped hanging out with them. You just finished listening to the first ever podcast from the Crooked Treehouse. It was All My Exes Live in Sex Flicks, Part 1, The F Word. This podcast was brought to you by Procrastination, bringing you quality products eventually. Today's theme music was called I Have Decided the Time Before. It is a mashup of Depeche Mode and Solange Knowles, made by Lee DM101. For more information about him, go to his SoundCloud at Lee DM101. Thank you for listening to this podcast, and I hope you are having a better day than I usually am. Hide what you have to hide, and tell what you have to tell.